To our parenting segment now. Thanks for your questions that you've emailed in and texted already for Nathan Macquarie-Wallace, who's part of the Brainwave Trust and X Factor Education in Christchurch. He's been a lecturer at the Christchurch College of Education, lecturing in human development, brain development, language and communication, and risk and resilience. And today we're talking about what 3 to 7 year olds need to learn. A very good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Lots of questions coming in already, which is great. But shall we set out some basic parameters? First of all, learning in the home environment and then learning in the school environment. What are some of the basics that children of this age need to maximise their ability to do this?
Well, I suppose the first thing to mention is that kids of this age are not little adults. I think by the time you're 7, you're all in your frontal cortex, and 7-year-olds do learn in a similar way to adults. So it's more fair to say that a 7-year-old is a little adult. But when we impose that on the 3 to 7-year-olds, we're sort of missing the driving force behind their development. They learn with a different part of the brain. They need a different type of learning. I mean, the literature talks about they need social-emotional skills rather than cognitive skills. What that means, put simply, is that it doesn't really matter how early or how many of their numbers they know or their colours or their alphabet. It's parents' perception that that's making the child intelligent, but that's not what the research shows. The research shows it's all about their social-emotional skills.
So get rid of whatever kind of stuff you've bought off the television or online that's going to make your child a genius by, pumping in rote learning or making it listen to Mozart 24 hours a day.
Yep.
When you say the social and emotional skills, be a bit more specific about what they need and how you can assist them.
Okay, well, the most simple way I can put it is it's how the child feels about themselves as a learner forms the basis for how they're going to do when they are 7. So, for instance, if you want to go to the research on who's doing well when they're 32 to 35 years old, who's most likely to have a degree, and you want to predict that based on what they're doing between 3 and 7, it's got nothing to do with how early they learn their colours or their numbers. The research shows that sort of stuff plateaus out around 7, 8, 9. So the 8-year-old that learned to read at 3.5 has got the same reading age typically as the 8-year-old that learned to read at 6.5. So the advantage is gone. What they, if you want to measure who's going to be doing well when they're 32 and base it on the under 7-year-old stuff, it's to do with your perception of yourself as a learner.
Do we go even further? Do we go perception of yourself full stop? You start with basic things. Am I loved? Am I secure?
Oh, absolutely.
All these things. And then to build an extra layer on those basics, what am I like as a learner, which will later become, I'm sure, am I dumb or am I bright? But what am I like as a learner? How do you begin to build positive experiences and a positive attitude around that?
That stuff about, am I loved? Am I valued? I sort of think of that as a 0 to 3 stuff. That's when you really establish the basis for that. If you've got 2 kids living next door to each other, and they're both five, say, about to start school, and one of them can count up to 100, she knows her colours, she knows her numbers, she can hold a pencil, but when she says to her mum, "Mum, I can count to 100, and she goes, 1, 2, 98, 99, 100, mum responds by going, "And what comes after 100? 100 and... And so if you said to that child, "What are you like as a learner?" then she would probably say, I'm all right, but I'm not quite good enough. I didn't know what come after 100.
So first thing is what? Praise. Well done. Good for you. That kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it's like the kid next door who doesn't know any of his numbers and doesn't know his colours, and he's the same age and he just hasn't bothered doing any of that stuff. But you say to him, "Mate, what sort of learner are you?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sweet, I think. If it gets too hard, I just keep trying or ask someone to help. And, I think I'm pretty good at learning." That's the kid who's more likely to have a degree at 32. So I think it's for parents to understand. It's to build up their experience as being successful in learning.
There's a real balance here, because I know exactly what you're saying. You want a child to have the starting point that they can learn, they can learn well, they can learn anything they want.
Yep.
They've just got to keep going.
Yeah, that's right.
But then there's that second point, which is, you do want them to keep going. So do you want to do both? Do you want to say, "Good for you, that's great," but also nudge them on to looking for the next thing? Do you see what I mean about it being a fine line?
Yeah, I do. It is a fine line.
You don't want to say, "Oh, great, I'm good at that. I feel good, excellent. I'll go and do what I want now," or "I won't push myself harder."
Yep.
Not a word I'm sure that you would use anyway, but, I won't stretch myself.
Yeah.
So if you're trying, and I imagine it's not a big deal at one age, it might be something you introduce at another age. How do you begin to get that balance between building confidence that I can learn, but also a desire to push on and learn?
I think if you make the child is really confident about their ability to learn, a lot of that that moving forward and facing new challenges is self-generated because they feel confident, they know they can do it, so they're hungry for new information. I think the balance there for us as parents is about realising that when we encourage a child to follow their own lead, we actually get better academic results. So when we push the child slightly, that tends to inhibit risk-taking. A big part of building your intelligence is risk-taking. You know, if I say to my son at the back in the car goes, oh, Dad, I can see the sheeps. And I go, oh, no, mate, they're not sheep. You don't put an S on sheep, you just say sheep. Then what happens is that in the next half hour, the research shows he uses much less language. So it slows down his language production. Whereas all I needed to say was, yeah, mate, I can see the sheep too. And I haven't been corrective, but I've modelled the appropriate response.
Very good, because you do want to transfer knowledge and skills and concepts to them. What you're saying is it's how you do it that'll make a big difference.
Yeah, but a lot of that knowledge and that content knowledge is really seven-year-old stuff. Yeah. Between 3 and 7, you want to create a thinker. You want them to be creative. You want them to be divergent. And that means really sort of avoiding right and wrong answers.
So you don't need to worry if it's sheeps. It won't be sheeps when he's 37.
Yeah, that's right. We don't need to worry about that. And correcting him is actually just going to slow it down.
Right. So in that early stage, building confidence, well done, and reassuring.
Yeah. And specifically tell him what he's done, well done, rather than just saying well done.
So reinforcing it.
Yeah. I really like the way you mixed your the orange and the red together to make that colour. Then the kid knows, oh, the thing I did well was mix the colours. Whereas if you walk past him and say, oh, good boy, because he's painting a picture and he's picking his nose at the same time, he doesn't know which one you're praising.
he probably will pick his nose at 37, but hopefully not in public. Come before, we've got lots of questions coming in, so I won't muck around, but come to that transition to preschool and then to school. Because, okay, you can start building these concepts, then they're going off and someone else, adult and child, is beginning to influence this. And so what are you looking out for there?
What am I looking out for in terms of transitioning into
school? Yeah, when they go to preschool and on to school.
Right. What you're looking for, I suppose, is a primary attachment relationship. The kid needs to be anchored into someone at the preschool. So rather than expecting them to have relationships with 7 teachers, they can have relationships with 7 teachers as long as they're anchored in one relationship. So that's the first thing to look for, that they've got a primary care, that the child's got a person to go to when they leave their parent. What you also want is for the, I mean, most centres are going to be operating under the national curriculum, Te Whariki, and that's going to encourage divergent thinking, creativity, openness. Basically, it's that thing I said before about not right or wrong answers.
Mm. And hopefully you've already built enough confidence or self-image about being a learner by the time they've gone off there, that if a teacher or another adult or another child is challenging that or doing it a different way, you've already laid down that essential self-belief.
Yeah, that's right. It's the create, you know, intelligence is really problem solving at its heart, and problem solving is hugely enhanced by creativity. So again, if I say to 2 kids in the back seat of the car, I wonder why the sky's blue, and one goes, oh, because the earth's mainly water and it's reflecting the water, that's correct. That's a good answer for a 7-year-old. But actually the 4-year-old that goes, oh, I think the sky's blue because this whole world's actually a dream that I'm having, and in the dream I'm the sky and me, and when I asked for an ice block and you wouldn't give me one, that made me sad, so I'm blue, so so's the sky. That's clearly illogical, it's not correct, but that's the child that's showing more intelligence. That's got far more deeper cognition. That's setting you up between 3 and 7 far more than just right, wrong answers.
So leave it alone, that desire to get in there and start putting the facts in can wait.
Create the thinker before you put the facts in.
Which is really interesting because there's this worry, and it is a worry now, of the increasing formalisation of preschool and even early primary, that it's getting all too formal too quick.
Absolutely. There's a real tension between what parents and community think and what the literature shows. Because actually, the good outcomes are associated with less structure.
Okay. Let's get into that. Actually, one more, and then we'll get into questions. One more, which is if you've got that learner, young learner, and you want to get that feeling of them being feeling good about themselves as a learner, and you're not getting that impression, or they're making negative comments back at you, like if something's going wrong, how can you intervene?
Intervene by stop asking right wrong questions, stop asking testing questions. What colour is this? The child gets the message that you're just valuing him as a performer rather than as a thinker. Children want to have their own opinion, so asking open-ended questions, you know, where do you think the universe come from? Is a far better question to be asking a 3 to 7-year-old than what colour is this? If you had a friend and you were testing your friend constantly, that's not very high quality communication. You know, it's the same with children. So I'd say if the child's not looking like they're confident, it's probably oftentimes because you value too much right and wrong answers, you value too much them parroting back, and you're not actually listening to the child and their concept of the world.
Okay, now I'm just going to put this first email aside because I think we've probably already ticked off.